Hey, it's Sarah. I hope you're staying home and staying safe out there. Even though we don't have any games to watch, we still have plenty of great podcasts to listen to. One of my favorites is the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. That's her dog. With the NFL draft still scheduled for later this month, Mina's going to let you know what your favorite team should or shouldn't do, and she'll do it in a witty, funny way. You can find the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcasts. At AutoZone, they're all about giving you more choices to help you get what you need and get it fast. If you need something for a job that has to get done today, just order on AutoZone.com and choose free same-day pickup. You can pick your order up in-store at more than 5,700 locations nationwide. Or if you prefer, you can have it brought out to you with their curbside option. Your choice. AutoZone also offers next-day delivery. Just order what you need on AutoZone.com by 10 p.m. and they'll bring it to your front door the next day. It's great for those jobs that can wait until tomorrow. That's how AutoZone helps you get your job done easier. Restrictions and details at AutoZone.com. Get in the zone. AutoZone.
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
That's what she said.
Well, that's what she said.
Welcome to That's What She Said, conversations with interesting people from the world of sports, music, comedy, and more. Talking about their lives, careers, successes, and failures.
I'm Chris Gillipo. My dilemma is figuring out how to not go on a 40-city book tour, because that's what I was supposed to be doing, and now I am not.
So, listen, yikes. I mean, clearly you can't go on a 40-city book tour right now, but there's ways we can get around this. Now, you can't replace the face-to-face element of getting to meet and chat with all the people, and of course, your own joy in getting to travel and experience all the cities, but I'm pretty sure you already know what I'm going to suggest because it's literally the only thing anyone can suggest right now for anything. Do it with Zoom. Yes, the online meeting platform that runs the universe right now. Maybe reach out to the bookstore or event space that was going to host your book signing or reading. They'll send out a sign up and a link, and then you virtually talk to all the folks in that city that would have shown up at that space. Seems pretty obvious, actually. It's probably something you've already thought of. So you got this.
The commish has spoken.
My guest this week is Chris Gillipo, the New York Times bestselling author of The Art of Nonconformity, The $100 Startup, The Happiness of Pursuit, and other books, including his new book, The Money Tree, which is out right now. Chris travels the world. He writes for ChrisGillipo.com, runs an annual World Domination Summit, and has a daily podcast called Side Hustle School. He is a great guest for right now because he's all about telling you how to best use your time, find the thing that you love, make money in unusual ways, and think outside the box. We talked about how he had a bit of a history of childhood arson, how he graduated college without a GED or a high school degree, why he thinks mediocrity is dangerous, how he made it to every country on earth before the age of 35, how his rebellious tendencies led him to figure out that you don't have to live life the way everyone else does. This is a great guy to listen to at this current moment in time. I think he can really help you think outside the box and make good use of your time if you want to be productive while you're stuck at home.
That's what she said.
My guest this week comes via Gretchen Rubin, a former guest who wrote The Happiness Project and Better Than Before, who really helped kickstart a lot of my attempts to change habits and behaviors. And she recommended Chris Gillipo and his Side Hustle podcast and the books that he's written, number of ways for people to sort of find ways to change what they do, who they are, how they spend their time in bigger ways, maybe than just, you know, doing more squats or drinking more water. But Chris is a New York Times bestselling author of a number of books. And I want to get into the current time and how a lot of the work you do is particularly useful while we're all in this shutdown. But let's go all the way back and talk about Chris Gillipo, the kid. You state that you're currently sort of a rebel who does things his own way. I feel for your parents if that was always the case.
Yes. Well, I was kind of a juvenile delinquent, true story, and a high school dropout. Later, I went to college. So I kind of like turned things around and eventually went to grad school. But there were definitely some rough years there.
So what were you into as a kid? What did you like?
Shoplifting.
Oh, okay.
Arson.
Oh, regular hobbies.
And video games. Those are probably my top three. But also
arson.
I liked reading. Let's say also reading, because I like to read books. And so that affected me later. Yeah, arson. There was a small house that burned down when I was 12.
Okay. So how did you deal with that? Or how did, I guess, your family deal with that? Did you get sent to a quote unquote military school that was really just a place where kids went when they're got kicked out of other places?
Well, it's funny you ask. I don't think I've actually really talked about this much. I was in a couple of those places for a while from, I think that was like age 13 to 15. But the fun thing about the house, this was in eastern Montana. It was an abandoned house. So let's just be clear, like nobody was hurt. And I was sentenced to community service, which they, you know, assigned me to the fire station, which obviously is kind of logical. But this is a very small town of like 3,000 people. And the fire station basically didn't have any work for me to do, like at all. So the guy from the fire station came to pick me up one night. You know, I went there, like swept the fire station. I like did something else for like 15 minutes, like sat around for 2 hours. And he dropped me off at the end of the night. And he's like, we'll let you know when we need you again. And it never happened, basically. So I kind of got off easy with that one.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So at some point you do decide to go to college. Was this right after your travel or before?
Oh, this was before. Yeah. I kind of actually, when I say I dropped out of high school, that's totally true. But I kind of dropped out to go to college, basically. Like I left high school and entered a community college when I was 16, kind of snuck into that. And then, you know, once they realized I wasn't a high school graduate, I was doing pretty well. Like I actually liked the structure of college because I could choose my own schedule and all that kind of stuff. And then later I transferred to a 4-year institution. And so because I was a transfer student, they're not looking at my high school background. So that's how I was able to do that.
So you never got your GED or your high school degree in any way?
Correct.
And you still got a degree from college?
I did. And then, like I said, went on to grad school later, which was kind of a waste of time, but, you know, learning experiences.
So where'd you go to college and what'd you study there?
Oh, this was a very random school, in North Alabama at the time. And I studied sociology. I actually tried to study accounting and I was terrible at it. I'm so, so glad that I was terrible at it, right? Because if I had if you're just mediocre at something, that's really dangerous. Because if you're mediocre, it's like you just kind of keep going. You keep plodding along and you end up in a mediocre career, you know, basically doing a mediocre job. But fortunately, I was awful at it. And I think I stumbled into sociology just taking a class on ethnicity or gender studies or something like that. And I was like, oh, this is actually really interesting. It's like the study of people. And so I ended up actually enjoying that. And ironically, here I am like 20 years later, never became a, you know, professional sociologist or whatever, but all of my work is about people and groups and community. So I actually from time to time think about those things that I learned, way back in the day.
Yeah, it can be useful, college. Yeah. You can learn things that you use.
Yeah, it's possible. It is theoretically possible.
Yes, yeah. I believe in it, but I understand that others maybe don't get the most out of it. And you didn't love grad school. What did you go to study and why didn't you think it was useful?
Yeah, I shouldn't say it was a waste of time. That's a bit much. So I went to study international studies, kind of a degree focused on governance in West Africa, which is what I ended up doing as an aid worker for a number of years. That was at the University of Washington in Seattle. It was a good experience in terms of, I think the thing that I learned the most was not so much like topical. It was more how to present an argument, like how to cogently, you know, write, whether it's an essay or, you know, later a blog post or a book or something and kind of explain your argument and like take the reader along. So that was, you know, not really what I was there to study, but obviously also ended up helping me quite a bit.
Yeah, that's massively important across so many different jobs. And it's funny because I remember one of my colleagues, former colleagues, Carrie Champion, and I were both speaking at a school. And she said one of the biggest things she learned was just having a thesis and how to make an argument and defend it, which in sports is, I mean, basically my whole family's lawyers. And so I'm doing the exact same job. I'm just defending why Michael Jordan's better than LeBron or why this team should, you know, get this quarterback. But it is about putting together those arguments. It's so useful across so many places. So you mentioned that you end up going to West Africa to work for Mercy Ships, which is a medical charity. Mm-hmm. Are you typical post-college age at this point, around early 20s?
Yeah, exactly. Age 22 to 26, ended up spending 4 years there. And that was just like it was like a post 9/11 experience for me in terms of I want to contribute something. I want to do something and heard about this organization, read about a surgeon from California who had actually spent close to 20 years there and met his wife, another volunteer, and they had two kids, brought them up there and all that stuff. And I was like, wow, if they can do that, you know, I can do something essentially. So, made an initial 2-year commitment and then extended for a third year and a fourth year.
So at that point, were you thinking, okay, I could make a career out of aid work, or were you still thinking that you were learning skills that would take you somewhere else?
Yes. Well, so I was also doing a couple other things. From age 18 or 19 on, I never actually had a real job. I kind of lost the last job I had at FedEx in the middle of the night, Memphis, Tennessee, and I started selling things on eBay.
Wait, so why did you lose it in the middle of the night?
Oh, sorry. Well, I worked in the middle of the night. Like I was a third shift worker.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
I thought there was another mischievous story. Like you lived
in
FedEx.
No, I should throw that in. I should add that in for a future storytelling time. But, no, And what was I going to say? So, from then on, basically, I was like selling stuff on eBay and learning about the internet. And this is, you know, 20 years worth of stuff. And I really, really liked that. It was fun because it was like, this is freedom. This is freedom. This is opportunity. I might not get rich, but if I can actually make a living doing something, you know, like that's so cool. So that allowed me to actually, you know, be a volunteer for several years in West Africa. It allowed me to pay for grad school, you know, without going into debt. So I was also doing all that at the time. And then when I did go to grad school, it was like, yes, maybe I want to get a PhD. You know, in international studies and kind of go that route. And once again, I'm fortunate that I was rejected from the majority of the programs that I applied to after my master's degree. And once again, I'm so thankful that happened because I can't imagine an alternate universe in which I went that direction.
Yeah. Okay. So you, described that sort of time in West Africa as a pivot and, It made you want to do a lot of the things you were writing about, but it also led you to write about those things on that blog, The Art of Nonconformity,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. It was much more of a, let's say maybe a transformation is the good. Like it was like I kind of just grew up there in some ways and matured and had a lot of just really incredible experiences at a young age, being able to go to a lot of these kind of war-torn countries. And I met Africa's first female president in Liberia and just all these things that kind of seemed normal at the time. But then you look back and you're like, well, that was actually quite abnormal. And, I started this project out of that to go to every country in the world, which became the Art of Nonconformity blog. I was like, I'm going to go to every country in the world and, you know, write about it, share my journey and process and such in case anybody else out there is interested in pursuing a big goal. And that was how everything began, you know, career-wise about 11 years ago.
So this is, you know, it wasn't exactly the advent of blogs. They had been around for a while, but it certainly maybe was a turning point for the original, which was, here's my thoughts about whatever, to monetizing and growing it as a sort of brand. And so the Art of Nonconformity is about travel and entrepreneurship and personal development. And, it was sort of about rebelling in some ways, right? It was about taking your own path. And was that simultaneous with you deciding to do all the travel?
Yeah, it was, so it's about, you know, thinking for yourself and like living differently. And if you don't want to follow a non-traditional path, then what do you do? And understanding that there are other people, you know, all over the world who feel the same way that you do and like share the same values. So it's some ways it's about rebelling, but other ways it's just kind of, you know, thinking for yourself. And it's interesting that you mentioned Gretchen Rubin earlier. She's a very good friend of mine now. We worked together on a whole bunch of stuff, but 11 years ago, I was a fan of hers. I mean, I'm still a fan now, but like 11 years ago, I was just a fan and, you know, read her blog and a couple of others that really influenced me to start The Art of Nonconformity. And it wasn't a business at all at first. It was just like, here's some stuff, you know, here's some thoughts and like I'm sharing this message and maybe it'll go somewhere. And I was, as you said, like chronicling that journey to every country in the world. That was kind of the genesis of it. But it became a lot more than that.
So you made it to every country in the world by age 35. You kind of cheated with one country where you just spent a couple hours in the airport. Have you since remedied that?
Just one country out of 193, just to be clear. And I was, and the only reason was because I was actually deported from this country. This is Eritrea. And I never count airport stops otherwise. I'm usually in each country, you know, for at least several days. But yes, that one country, I was physically constrained and limited and like put back on a plane to fly to Egypt. So I have not remedied it. It's actually quite difficult for Americans to visit Eritrea. But hopefully at some point I can do that.
Why did you get deported?
They don't like Americans to come in, which, I mean, is not unusual. I mean, America doesn't like lots of other, you know, people to come in from different countries. So it was just one of those, things. There was a long time war between Eritrea and Ethiopia, and the U.S. supports or has historically at least supported Ethiopia. So they're like, we don't really want any visitors.
Okay. So speed round, because we could do a whole podcast on just, I've seen every country in the world that's so speed round. And I want top of your head. Don't think about it too hard. Okay.
Right.
Weirdest or most different for you country to visit?
Weirdest or most different. Top of my head. Can't think about it too hard, man. I don't, Bhutan is kind of weird, but in a good way. It's positive. You know, it's like, it's just different. Maybe one of the stands like Tajikistan, they're kind of like ruled by an autocracy and, you know, just things kind of operate in their own way. So I'm going to pick those two, I guess. Bhutan for positive and Tajikistan for not so positive.
Okay. Where's the place where you ate the best food?
The place where I ate the best food. Well, you know, one of my favorite countries is Australia, and I feel like there I have all kinds of good cuisines, and it's just nice. But India maybe is also my favorite food. If I had to eat one food for the rest of my life, it would be Indian. So I'll pick somewhere in South Asia.
The most beautiful.
I really liked Lithuania. Yeah. Lithuania and Macedonia, these two small countries in Eastern Europe that are not visited that much. I just had a really beautiful time there. I think so much of travel is like contextual, you know, it's like what's going on in your life and like what experience you have. You can have a miserable time in Paris or somewhere, or you can have an amazing time in probably in Tajikistan.
My friends are living in Kosovo right now. And so they were raving about Macedonia and saying just nobody goes there. And it's just a place that we all would love if we knew about it.
That's where I went from it. I went to Kosovo, to Skopje. What's the scariest? Somalia is really not a great place to be. I mean, there's some beautiful, amazing people there, but there's also like not a functioning government. So I went to Somaliland, which is technically still part of Somalia because it doesn't have independence, but it is a little bit better in terms of that stuff.
Friendliest.
I couldn't pick a friendliest. The majority of countries are friendly. Like, people always ask, like, what's the place that you had the worst experience or whatever. And like, I've had amazing experiences in probably 180 out of 193 countries. So
it's wonderful.
Most people are friendly everywhere.
And what's the place you most want to get back to as soon as the world opens back up? Not necessarily where you have a plan to go for some work or something, but that you're like, I need to get back because I still need to do this, or I want to do this again.
Mm. So Hong Kong has always been a special place to me. I've been many, many times, so I know it quite well, but they have had a number of blows there. From coronavirus to the protests and issues with the mainland and all that kind of stuff. So I look forward to going back there and seeing it in a better place.
Yeah, where's the place you've been the most outside of the States?
Hong Kong is actually quite frequently transited just because of the travel stuff. Hong Kong, London, Frankfurt, Tokyo, Johannesburg. Any of these like major hubs where you're going to go to one place to get to somewhere else would be one of those.
Okay, so you start the Art of Nonconformity blog. You talk a lot about this traveling, this goal to see every country and be in every country before the age of 35. But you also start to think about, what am I doing with my life and how is it fulfilling me in ways that had I been mediocre and successful enough at something, I would have been stuck there instead. And one of the things you write about when you're trying to get people to think about how to expand their own world is you write, start by asking why. Mm-hmm. Why do you do what you do? What's the point? What if you stopped doing it and started doing something else? Think about what you'd really like to do. And if you're not sure, experiment. Avoid debt whenever possible. That's important since it will reduce the choices available to you in the future. So are those all the questions you were asking yourself? Or was it that you organically came upon these things and then you had to reverse engineer how other people could find them?
I think it was an organic process. I mean, it's not like this is the checklist of life questions that you must answer. It's more of a principle of like, a lot of us kind of go through life without asking why. And if you start asking that of just everything you encounter, why is it this? Why do I need to do that? Why is there a prerequisite for this? Is there some other way to do this? What do I really want? And what is the best path, to make that happen? I think that's just very helpful for anyone. I think that's probably the most helpful skill that anybody can develop. And it's freely available, for anyone. I think we just kind of throughout our lives, through institutions, relationships, whatever else, we kind of, dull that skill, or we stop asking why as much as perhaps that would be beneficial to us.
Do you think it's a natural quality of yours to not be afraid of failing or not be afraid of the debt? Because I think for some people, there are dreams. There is a natural desire to do what they love, but the fear of taking a step outside a path that they're already on is too great. Did you have to fight that fear at all, or has that never been there for you?
Yeah, no, I think I've always been afraid of stuff. And I think the idea of being fearless is largely a myth. At least for most people that I've known, and for myself too. I think I have always been willing to kind of, push through it. I've always been willing to like say, okay, I'm afraid or nervous or insecure or whatever about, X topic or X goal, but I'm still going to try to do it anyway. I think for me, the fear of not doing it was often greater than the fear of like doing it and failing it. So failing at it. So if you could think about, this has been helpful for me, is thinking about regret. And that was very much a motivator of deciding to go to every country, because I love to travel, and it wasn't about a big goal. It wasn't like kind of check off these countries from a list. Like, I'd been to 70 countries before I officially said, okay, let's try to go to all of them. But then once I had that idea, I couldn't stop thinking about it. And I thought about it for 3 months, and it just wouldn't go away. And finally I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know how it's going to work, logistics, cost, you know, how it will affect the rest of my life and such. But if I can kind of fast forward in my mind, like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, if I look back and say, I had the idea to do this and I really thought about it a lot, but I didn't try, I think I wouldn't be happy with myself. I would regret that. So that's been very motivational.
You wrote a book, The Art of Nonconformity, after the blog became successful. You donated the proceeds to Charity mm-hmm. Water. How mm-hmm. do you have enough money to travel to all these places mm-hmm. and then write a book and donate the proceeds?
Yeah, well, I mean, I have always worked for myself through these little entrepreneurial projects. I've shared a lot of the details on my blog. I've shared income reports and such before in the past. And this is all like, I didn't have a public project, you know, until, like I said, close to halfway through the goal. And so I was really good at building, like small to medium projects. I never like had a startup, you know, I never had like a quote unquote exit or anything like that. I was just kind of good at lifestyle projects, at figuring out, you know, information publishing and like Google AdWords when that thing was new and, you know, AdSense. And so it's kind of like, I was really tactical, which in some ways is good. In other ways, it's like, well, you're choosing the tactics over the strategy. And so in my career as an author now, I'm like trying to actually think, you know, bigger picture, what do I want to accomplish? But a lot of what I teach, you know, through Side Hustle School or whatever is like, okay, if you are in debt and you need to make a change, you need to do something right now. What is that thing? How can we figure that out for you?
So you said that you did sell stuff on eBay. What are another couple specific things that you actually did to make money before you went on all these travels?
Yeah. So, well, maybe let's say during the travel, because I had written a bit about, you know, just kind of surface level in terms of how I'm booking these trips and the logistics. I was really into this concept called travel hacking and using frequent flyer miles and mistake fares and you know, round the world tickets, all these little things. I was really a geek about that stuff. And so I noticed that people would often ask me questions about it. By the way, for listeners, this is a great strategy. If you're trying to figure out what is the thing I'm an expert in, like pay attention to what people ask you because they're going to ask you stuff and it shows that you're the authority on that topic and also that they have interest and demand in it. So, I noticed that people were asking me, okay, so how do you actually do that? How much does it cost? Like, you know, you use your miles to, you know, fly to wherever, to Germany and then Thailand and so on. And it only costs, you know, $20 in taxes, whatever. So I started a business called the Travel Hacking Cartel. All that to say, I started a membership site that people could pay $15 a month for, and they would get, you know, get deal alerts and also education, showing them how to do it. And then also just apprising them whenever there was like something to go and take advantage of. So that was one of the things I did in terms of like paying attention to what people were noticing and how could I, you know, respond to that.
And of course, it allows you to continue researching and finding information that serves the thing that you want to do, which is a great right. way to balance, you know, doing a job and making money, but doing something that you're invested in yourself.
Yes.
You mentioned the idea of what am I an expert in? What do people come to me mm-hmm. for? They have a need. But you also said, if you ask yourself what excites you and what bothers mm. you about the world,
yeah,
it
right,
can help
right.
guide your next steps. And also that mm-hmm. you have to be surrounded by people that are likely to serve the endeavor you're interested in and not block it. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. beyond, of course, fear of debt or failure, there is also fear of judgment or a lack mm-hmm. of support from others. How do you yeah. power through that if you are deciding I'm either going to add a side hustle to my mm-hmm. current job or quit everything altogether and start something new?
Well, you know, here's what I say. If your friends don't support your dreams, if your friends are not supportive of you in life in general, then you're going to need some new friends. And I'm not saying that you know, completely turn your back on everybody in your life. Now it's more in addition. It's like, I need to have some people who believe, you know, in my dreams and my goals. So I think, you know, part of what I've tried to do for 10 years is create community that is supportive of people who are trying to do something different. And in terms of like, you know, like family members and such, I have found, not always, but I would say like the majority of the time, people eventually come around. Oftentimes people are resistant because they might be a little bit envious. Like this is what they wanted to do, but they weren't able to do it or chose not to try. And now you're the one doing it. But ultimately, you know, your proof is in your outcome. Your proof is in your results. And if you're able to do something that other people want to do, then it will actually be a positive inspiration to some of those people who are originally opposed.
Life today is kind of a lot. It forces us to always be on. But every now and then, it's time to just stop, crack open a mountain cold Coors Light and chill. So when you choose to turn off, choose the one beer that's made to chill. Coors Light. Mountain cold refreshment, made to chill. Coors Light is brewed with a 3-step cold process. Cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged, so it's actually made to chill. The mountains on Coors Light's cold activated bottles and cans turn blue when chilled to perfection. poured in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado in 1978, Coors Light is refreshing, crisp, and only 102 calories. That's why Coors Light is the one to choose when you need a moment of chill. When you want to reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. You can have Coors Light delivered by going to get.coorslight.com and finding local delivery options near you. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. You have a number of books, and I want to, in about two sentences or less, kind of sum up what you were tackling there, and then we'll get to how all of those combined things can sort of aid people now. The Art of Nonconformity, we've kind of talked about, but still give me your two or three sentence elevator pitch.
You don't have to live your life the way others expect. And you can do good things for yourself and for others at the same time. It's not a false choice. And here are lots of examples of people doing that.
Ooh, love that. Okay. The $100 startup.
You don't have to be wealthy or a person of means or have access to certain networks, you know, or expertise to be able to start a business. There are all kinds of people across middle America in particular, and just like that we don't hear about all the time, who are finding a way to, you know, make a money from their passion by doing something that they care about.
The happiness of pursuit.
Challenge is good for us. Okay. So like doing hard things is good for us. Pursuing a quest can bring meaning to our life. Here's the story of my quest to go to every country in the world, and also the global story of lots of other people who have chosen to pursue a quest.
Okay. Born for this.
How to find the work you were meant to do. What is the convergence between joy, money, and flow? Joy is, you know, your passion. Money is like what is sustaining. Flow is what you're really good at. You know, these three things are kind of the trifecta. And we talked about like all the mediocre things that I tried to do before. You know, how do you actually get to that trifecta? How do you find that thing that really makes you come alive and is bringing value to the world, and you're also recognized for it?
Side hustle from idea to income in 27 days.
Well, you hit it with the subtitle right there. My idea of like, you know, here's a step-by-step project. Do this. You know, we're not trying to create a scalable business. We're not trying to be Elon Musk in 27 days, but I do believe that everybody can get something up and running in that period of time, without spending a lot of money. And if you can do that, then that just feels so empowering. That feels so good. That's always the start for everything else. That's why I get excited when people are like, I made $500 or I made, you know, $50, whatever it is. It's like, that's so cool, because you're going to want more. You're going to want to do that again and again.
Okay. And then you've got a new book called The Money Tree. It's, open, available to the public today when this is hitting. Mm-hmm. So,
awesome.
What's the tagline on that?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for mentioning it. Money Tree, a story about finding the fortune in your own backyard. This is essentially the $100 startup in story form or in narrative form. So I wanted to reach people who might not read a business book or a how-to book, but they understand that in these uncertain times in particular, you know, they need to find a way to create more security for themselves. They understand that they can't depend on a corporation or on the government or on organization, anybody really. But they also feel intimidated. They also feel like, well, I'm not an entrepreneur. You know, I don't want to necessarily do that. So this is like a story about a guy who has a lot of these experiences. He has a lot of student loan debt, like so many people do. He has a good job. So it's not like he's not a hard worker, but he realizes that's not enough to get ahead. That's not enough to solve the problem. Driving for Uber is not going to solve the problem. He has to do something else. So he has to kind of go through that process. And my hope is that readers will enjoy the story, like it's entertaining, but they'll also be inspired to take action and to change some of their circumstances as well.
Ooh, I have a friend for that one for sure, that I'm going to send that to.
Awesome.
And then the tagline or the summation of the World Domination Summit that you do every single year, probably going to be postponed this year, but you hope to still do it, and it will be the last one. So how does this kind of combine all these other things that you work on?
So this will be our 10th year, whenever it happens, as you said. I mean, the world is changing and such. But the tagline is how to live a remarkable life in a conventional world. So we're bringing together people from, you know, all different walks of life. To Portland, Oregon every summer. We have keynote speakers. Gretchen's been one of our speakers before. We have lots of little, you know, breakout sessions and workshops and meetups and things. And the attendees themselves also kind of bring a whole lot to it. So just like a little bit of a festival of ideas and community.
So you do a lot of things, because you have a daily podcast, you write for the site, you organize this summit, you're writing books. And for someone who maybe considers themselves rebellious or not wanting to be tied down, how do you make work and showing up every day and having a schedule of I need to do this thing not conflict with your natural desire to not be conformed?
I guess these are choices that I've made. So like nobody's forcing me to do these things. I'm the one who takes on these projects. I am motivated by projects and by starting things. And I like to, you know, make things and see them go out in the world. And if once in a while one of them hits and one of them actually connects with people, then that's very motivational. It kind of helps me to think, okay, you know, what's next? So I do feel really fortunate. I want to say like, I also feel very grateful. I feel very fortunate that I've been able to have this life and, you know, to do all the different things, you know, that have happened along the way. And so I want to, you know, try to use whatever ability I have, you know, to the utmost of that ability.
I love the fact that your podcast has specific examples every day. It's everything from, you know, a single mom who starts a job at home and makes money out of it. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, very specific. Like, should I make an LLC and should I file it and is it necessary? You know, a music teacher who quits a job and earns a bunch of money on an online app. Are there one or two from your work where you've had someone come to you or be a part of your community and then come back with a great success story that particularly made you happy?
Yes, there are a lot of them. In fact, I would say 20 to 30% of the stories on the show now are coming to us from listeners like in previous years. One of my favorites is this guy named David Duras, who is a minister. I believe in California, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, as a minister, he's not making a lot of money. So he often did lots of side jobs, you know, to support himself. The problem was the side jobs he was doing were kind of, you know, manual labor, you know, low wage. So he's just getting burnt out essentially. So, through some combination of circumstances, like he starts listening to the podcast and obviously doing all the work himself. So let's give him credit. But he was, his side, you know, his like hobby was, role-playing games, like tabletop role-playing games with dice. And he decided to start making custom dice and like that actually looked good because a lot of them are just kind of generic. And so he learned how to import dice from China and like he made a whole brand. And within a few months, he was making $3,000 a month on the side, you know, from this little business. And that was about a year ago. We featured him in another book I did called 100 Side Hustles. And the last I heard, I think he was doing $5,000 or $6,000 a month in profit. You know,
wow.
I was like, this is fantastic. This is so cool because, you know, he's a minister. He was actually using some of the initial profits to pay for his wedding. And I was like, that is so cool. So stories like that, you know, again, are like, why would you not want to do more of that? You know, if I can hear stuff like that and contribute to it in some way, why would I not want to do more?
So I want you to take this the right way and hopefully I word it the right way. I'm curious. And it's funny because, I've had other people on the show where I'm fully bought in on what they're doing, but I understand that the language that they use can sometimes turn people off. Mm-hmm. That's true with my yoga teacher, who's also an energy coach, who, you know, I told people at the beginning, you got to power through. If you think it's hippie juju stuff, like it's actually proven by science, stick with me. And in your case, a lot of the language that gets used around this stuff is the same language used for pyramid schemes or scams or like, if you give me $20, I'll tell you how to make. And I wonder how you, cause I don't think that's what you're doing. And it's very clear that, you know, the books you're writing and the work you're doing is about how to put the work in to make this happen. Not about, let me not do any work and flip this into more money by sitting at home and buying into some scam. But how do you make sure that people don't see you as this snake oil salesman or this type? Because the language and the conversations oftentimes have those words that set people off.
Well, right after this interview, sir, I have a wonderful opportunity I'd love to tell you about. We got 20 minutes.
You have five friends, and if they have five friends.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I try not to worry too much about what people think of me or what I can't control, you know what I mean? But I also do try to be intentional with language. So, I mean, there might be some, like, you know, side hustle. I know some people have a challenge with hustle, and so I just try to talk about that and what does it mean to me? You know, to me, it means a lot of the things we were just talking about like I'm doing something I'm really excited about and believe in. So I want to do it more. I don't sell a lot of stuff. That's the other thing. I have the podcast is free. The books are, you know, low cost. People can read them from the library. I have never, you know, in 10 years, you know, built like an extensive, you know, back end. Here's my funnel system. Here's like,
buy my,
you
know, mugs. Can, buy my,
right, exactly. Oh, I should get mugs. That's a good idea. But no, I don't. I just don't. So I guess I'm trying to, I mean, I'm just trying to put something forward and show examples of, you know, here's real people that are doing it. And it's not about giving me or anybody else $20 or $2,000. It's about what can you do for yourself? You know, the power is within you. You don't even need my book. You don't need anything really. Like if you listen to this conversation and you go away thinking, man, maybe there is something I can do, then that's powerful. Listen to that and go and take your next step. It doesn't need me or anybody else.
Yeah. So I'm also curious, as someone who is traveling a ton, right now you are sequestered, mm-hmm. I presume, like
yep,
most of
I
us.
Am. Indeed. Are
you okay? Because I know people who are, I don't relax very well. And actually
right.
this forced relaxation is not bad for me because usually I don't have a choice. I'm just too busy. And so now I'm like, well, here's the thing you've been asking for. Enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But some other people, they can't do that. So how are you handling this?
I mean, yeah, I used to say on my Instagram bio, relaxing stresses me out.
Yeah, it does.
So I also,
oh my God,
also
it makes, I'm like, what could I be doing right now? I'm like, I can't believe I just wasted an hour just relaxing.
Right.
I need to go do something.
I get it. Well, I haven't actually been traveling as much recently. I was getting ready to do this, you know, 40 city book tour, which is not happening. So that is a thing. But I mean, as a writer and as a podcaster, like I spend a lot of time by myself and like I've been like socially distancing for 20 years, you know, so I don't necessarily need to be traveling. Like I've actually found a lot of benefit of just like, you know, more productivity and staying in one place. So I'm okay with that. It's more just like, you know, the stuff for the book tour and how can I get the message out and all that kind of stuff.
And you're married, right?
I am.
Okay. So how does someone who's constantly traveling, has mm-hmm. a million different jobs at all times, and it doesn't like to be, you know, living the traditional life, find a partner who's in on that?
Well, I want to always be honest with you, and I'll say that it hasn't been easy necessarily. And that probably hasn't been easy because of me, you know, not because of her. So as I said, I'm not traveling as much now, but, I mean, these are kind of things that we've had to like navigate and figure out. So she has her own career. She's a therapist. She's really focused on that. So we just try to have honest conversations about what can you invest, you know, here in this relationship? What can I invest? Is that enough of a matchup and so on? But of course, everybody has to kind of figure that out, you know, for themselves.
Yeah. And for you, obviously, there also needs to be this push and pull of like, here's the thing that's best for me right now and mm-hmm. what I want to do. But now I have to actually think about how it's balanced with the people around me, which I'm sure mm-hmm. comes up for people in a lot of these side hustle opportunities too, right? Because if you're not solo, maybe when you're in your early 20s and you're like, mm-hmm. who am I and what do I want to do with myself? It's mm-hmm. easier to put those risks out there. But let's say you're talking to people who have families, people to support,
sure.
people who depend on them. How do you, I would say probably the toughest part of any of this, of mm-hmm. deciding on a side hustle or starting all over altogether, is the very first step of deciding that you're willing to give up the things that bring you comfort. Mm-hmm. How do you advise people, especially ones that have families or things that they need to support?
I don't think they have to give up all their comfort. I think it's like, you know, if you really look at your week, you know, where can you find some pockets of time? I'm not saying you should never watch TV, but you need to watch, you know, so much TV if that's your thing. Can you spend 20 to 30 minutes a day, you know, working on a project? If you're actually doing the right things, you know, for that 20 to 30 minutes a day and doing them consistently over time, I think you can get pretty far. You can get a lot further than somebody who's just kind of flailing about and trying to do a lot of stuff, like throwing things at the wall and stuff. So I think my market has always been busy people. My market's like people who really are busy and have responsibilities, just as you said, and are trying to figure out what to do. So that's why the podcast Side Hustle School is, you know, it's every day, but it's also 10 minutes. Like it's really short. So it's meant to be like, here's a story. Here's an example. Like here's a tip, you know, go away. And once in a while people do complain and say, I wish it were longer. And I'm like, then you're not the market basically. Like the market is for people who don't have a lot of time, but still want to invest in themselves. So I think it's, you know, you also have to, here's one more thing. I'm sorry. I feel like I'm like, you know, overloading here, but one more thing is you have to think about your long-term. And, you know, even though I just said, like, you don't have to give up everything, you probably need to give up something. But if you're giving it up for something, like, you think about what is the reality that you want to have. You know, if you have limits and constraints in your life now because of debt or whatever else, if you want to be free of that, what would that look like? Wouldn't that be so much better? So, you know, what are the short-term, you know, sacrifices or compromises you might want to make in order to achieve that long-term reality?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that was interesting, I was watching you and Gretchen Rubin did a sort of book event together a little while ago, and the video is online. And it was funny to see the balance of what you both do that intersects. And one thing I would say is that she talks a lot about how there's no one fix for everybody. So if someone tells you this works for everybody, it's not, because people have different tendencies and personality types. One thing I would wonder about for you is, to me, when I think about the way that I would need to do something like this, is three S's: schedule, structure, and space. Do I have a space to work in that feels separate from everywhere else so that when I'm there, that's what I'm focused on. I'm not halfway into this while also watching TV, while also in the kitchen or something. And then schedule, am I making sure I put it on my calendar like a meeting or a call or anything else I do instead of waiting till I'm bored and then giving it a couple minutes? And then structure, how am I planning ahead for the current needs of it and then what's going to come later in order for it to succeed? Is that just kind of something that probably everybody needs, or are you able to help people who don't like any of those things?
I mean, I like those things. I mean, I'm just listening to that. I'm like, that's great. I don't know what I would add to that. I mean, that's great advice. I mean, I think if you, you know, if you can't do all of it, do what you can, because every one of those things is beneficial. And if you're in a place where like not everybody is able to have their own space, you know, if they're in a studio apartment, if they're in a dorm room or whatever, but you can still make it a ritual somehow. You can still make a routine. Like, is there a coffee shop you can go to? Like, at least when we're able to go to coffee shops again, is there a place you can go to, but you go to the same place, you know, every day. And if possible, you sit at the same table because that's your time when you do your thing. So I actually think that kind of compartmentalization is helpful.
Those are great tips for now, you know, in our heads to save for later. But, currently there are probably people who listen to your podcast or who are in the midst of wanting to do something like this and are struggling with the constraints. How does what you're talking about and what you, tell people, to do, actually work right now? How are you able to still do side hustle school in the current moment?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I feel like this time, so much change is going to come out of this time. So many shifts, and people are going to make just really brave decisions. Like obviously, like there's so much, you know, negative impact. I never want to just say like it's a silver lining. If we could all like press a button and change it, we would, but we can't. So what is within our control? I think this is going to be a time where people are looking at all sorts of different alignment. And as for side hustles, like I'm hearing from people every day now that are like, actually, I have more time now. You know, I'm underemployed or unemployed, or I'm working at home. I've always wanted to work at home. I've always wanted to work remotely. My boss has always said no, but you know, now he has no choice or she has no choice. And so people are evaluating all this stuff. And right now it's like, you know, what are the opportunities now? You should always look and say, okay, when something changes, what are the opportunities? People are longing for connection. They're desperately longing for connection and community. As a practical point, anything to do with like remote work or web conferencing, like if you wish you could go back and buy stock in like hand sanitizer companies, but also Zoom, you know, and other, and other, you know, companies that are like
Zoom rules the world right now.
Right. Yeah, for sure. So there's always winners and losers. You know, when there's progress, there are winners, but there are also losers. Like, you know, when the automobile industry came out, the horse and buggy industry is like decimated. But when there's disruption, we always think about the negative consequences, but they're also like positive opportunities. So my encouragement is like, just think about where are the positive opportunities? What can you do during this time?
Yeah, I love that idea because I do think that the attitude that you bring to anything is the biggest decider in how that thing will affect you. And for the people who are, and listen, everybody's going through different stuff right now. If you've lost your job or you're financially struggling, it is so much harder for you than someone who's just made uncomfortable or unhappy by being at home. A lot of us missing out on opportunities are still able to depend on a salary, which makes your approach totally different. But that being said, like you just spoke to, there are always opportunities around massive shifts and changes. And this is a time where, and my friend just said this and it was so spot on, for a time that's so completely odd and and strange for all of us, we've never been more connected in terms of doing the same thing, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. Never.
I'm doing the same thing as Oprah right now, right? Like, and she's doing the same thing as your cousin Bill, who sits in his garage 8 hours a day and does nothing. And so it's, and this is the quote, the most isolating thing most of us has done is ironically, almost surely the most collective experience we've ever had in our lifetimes.
Yeah, that's a great quote.
And thank you to my friend Bamaya for sending it to me. But that's how you now look around and say, if this is what I'm feeling, then probably so are all these other people. If this is what I need right now, probably other people need that too. If this is what's in demand, and then you seek out those opportunities. And if you approach it with that, you know, this is how I'm going to use this time. These are the things I've always wanted to do and haven't. Maybe you emerge from it feeling productive and like a changed and bettered person instead of burning the day, wasting it because it wasn't the way you felt.
No, I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I could add a lot to that. That's beautiful. I'll just say one thing. I wrote a post the other day. It's like, what is the best thing we can do during this time? And you know, the best thing is what everybody has already heard about. You know, we should wash our hands. We should try to keep people safe, avoid gatherings, you know, So we do that. But all that stuff is kind of passive, right? So the question is, what is the second best thing that we can do? Those of us who are not healthcare workers, by the way, of course, like if you're on the front lines, like shout out to you. You're saving the world. But for everybody else, you know, the majority of people, I think the second best thing is to be productive and to work on something, because just, you know, refreshing the news every single hour, is just going to make you more anxious. Like, it's not that you shouldn't be informed, but, you don't necessarily need to be informed like minute by minute. And you should use that time, however it exists, you know, for you, to come out of it and look back, you know, however many months from now it is, and say, wow, during that time, I'm going to remember that time no matter what, because there's going to be a pivotal memory in our lives, like for all of us collectively. And so individually, are you going to be able to also remember, and during that time is when I, you know, started making art, or like I started uploading my songs, you know, to the internet, or I started that business, or I started writing a book that I had the idea to do forever and I never did. Like, I feel like that is what you want to be able to say, you know, in the future when you're looking back.
Yeah. And anything that might feel trivial right now, we will need it again. And look at what we're spending so much of our time on now that's bringing us joy. It's people doing live concerts. It's the entertainment that we're connected to. None of those things feel trivial to us in the moment, and they certainly won't months or years from now. So whatever you've always wanted to do is just as necessary now, even if it might feel like it's not compared to doctors and everyone else. Well, I think this is the perfect time for a lot of the messages that you talk about and a lot of the work that you do. So hopefully people will spend some time checking out the books and the podcast and figure out if there's something within them that they've been putting off. Before I let you go, you do have to do the one thing that everybody does and nobody expects.
Didn't expect a kind of Spanish Inquisition. Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
It's the Spanish Inquisition. Number one. Okay. What's your desert island album? You can only have one.
Something by Tycho.
Okay. Number two. What habit or quality do you think has contributed most to your success?
Curiosity.
That's my favorite. Number three. What would you consider your biggest failure?
Oh, the biggest failure. Oh, and I got to do it quickly. I've just got like a big picture thing, and it has to do with like potential, but that doesn't really make sense. Biggest failure. I don't know. I guess I have failed to properly, you know, recognize and capitalize on in a monetary sense, but capitalize in a greater good sense on all of the greater good within my community and the people that I'm connected with. I feel like I don't always do a good job serving them.
Yeah, it's hard with the bandwidth to feel like you're touching every place that you could help or work with. Mm-hmm. Number four, have you ever been in a fist fight?
Just when I was in those juvenile delinquent years. Yeah, a couple of them there in some of the treatment centers I was in, but not as an adult.
And then that one time when you fist fought a burning building, that was
right.
Yeah.
I was going to say I won, go on.
Yeah. In the end, maybe not so much. Number five, if you could switch lives with anyone for a day, who would it be?
Oh, I'm glad you said for a day. For a second, I was like, I'm happy with my life.
Yeah.
For a day. I don't know. What do people say to that? I'm like,
Beyonce, Barack Obama.
Like, I love Barack Obama, but I don't know if I want to be him. I love Beyonce, but I don't know if I want, you know what I mean? Like, because that's something you have to aspire to be.
Right. I mean, I would definitely take probably some sort of rock star, because that's what I always wanted to do, and just getting to perform on stage and
that
have
is the best
crowd.
Answer.
Yeah.
That is the best. It has to be some kind of performance thing. Yeah. So I don't know who it would be, but something like maybe like some heavy metal band. I think that would be cool.
Okay. You know? All right.
Like David Lee Roth, but when he was actually like,
right,
in his prime.
Back
not like
prime.
The 90 year old David Lee Roth.
Number six, what's the most embarrassed you've ever been?
When I was in Singapore for the first time, I went to Starbucks and the door was made of, was all glass, and I didn't notice it. And I walked straight into it full speed.
Oh.
And like, you know, spilled the coffee all over the place, actually cut myself, like I'm bleeding, and like everybody's pointing and they're like, look at that guy. He just walked straight into the door. You know, that was, I don't know that I'll ever do anything worse than that.
Yeah. That's a good one. Number seven, what's the thing about yourself you'd most like to improve?
I am often behind in getting back to people, which goes back to my failure. So I wish I would be better at that. I hate that.
Okay. Punctuality in terms of responsiveness.
The response. Yeah.
That's been a tough one for me right now, because everyone assumes I'm not busy. And then my inbox is just overflowing with like, hi, I'm a college student at wherever. And I was hoping you could, and I want to help out, but I'm like, I'm actually working the same. I'm really busy. I'm so sorry. My inbox is black hole.
But people like Gretchen are amazing at it. That's the thing. Gretchen actually is like faster than anybody else in the world. I'm like, how do you do this? So there is a way to do it somehow.
Well, but she's also like that person who's like 15 minutes every day at this time is when I do my emails. And I'm like, yeah, that's not how I operate. I'm working on it. Number eight, if you could be commissioner of life for a day, what one rule would you enforce that all of society would have to adhere to?
Everybody has to think for themselves today.
Whoa.
Because, you know, Martin Luther King said nothing pains people, you know, nothing pains some people so much as having to think. And so it's not necessarily an easy thing, but that would change the world, I think.
And more so than ever, because, you know, I had Gia Tolentino, who's this great writer from The New Yorker on. She does a lot of work around the internet. And one of the things she said that just blew my mind, and I'm not going to paraphrase it right, was essentially that we're on the internet so much now. And she used TikTok as an example where, like, you tell it what you like and then it gives you more of that. But at some point, do you know if you like it or you like it because they keep giving it to you? And so the internet becomes, is this my opinion or have I seen so many people with it that I now think it's mine? And I never really thought about it or of it. And so now is a really good time for people to think for themselves, which is hard to do when it's just a constant stream of opinion and thought. Number nine, what's the most scared you've ever been?
The most scared I've ever been. I mean, like I said, I had some rough teenage years and there were times when I, to be just very honest, I didn't want to live. And so that was a very scary time. And I do still from time to time, think back on that time and feel grateful again that I was able to make it through it.
Yeah. Number 10, what three words would you most hope people would use to describe you?
Oh my gosh, Sarah. I don't know. That's the thing about like, what was I going to say about, you know, how do you control what people think of you or what? Like, I don't think like that. I don't think like that.
Well, you don't have to. It's just a hope. It's a hope. So it's
right.
What do you want people to see in you that matters to you?
Right. Right. So contrarian, generous or kind, you know, generous/kind. And going to have to think about that third one.
Maybe
something
helpful.
To do with.
It certainly feels like you care as much about finding what you want as you do helping others find what they want.
Yeah, that's fair. I like that. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's your hope, not mine. But, you know, I throw that up there on the old tombstone.
Cool. I'll take it.
And finally, who would you recommend I have on this podcast? Who should I talk to?
Oh, that's a great question. Have you talked to Ryan Holiday? Just talking to him the other day.
I haven't.
He's a great guy. He's the founder of Daily Stoic and author of lots of books, including The Obstacle is the Way and Stillness is the Key and a bunch of other stuff. He's cool.
Okay. That sounds really good. Stillness is the Key is a good one for right now. We're all having to find beauty in stillness. This was awesome. Thank you so much for chatting with me. And I hope there's a lot of people out there that get something good out of this, especially in this time.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Sarah. I appreciate it.
It's time once again for South Bitch Sessions, where I rant about something that bothers me and I fix it. This week, it's people trying to take advantage of this pandemic for their own personal gain. I'm talking douchebags sending links via Twitter claiming to sell a vaccine for the coronavirus. I'm talking losers hacking into emails and encouraging people that don't have proper internet literacy to send them money or personal information because they think they're communicating with their bank or their hospital. One day if I snap, it's probably going to be about this. I mean, there was actually an email circulating that claimed to be from the World Health Organization, and you were supposed to click and open an attachment to help protect yourself, but it really downloaded something to your computer that read all your keystrokes and stole your information. How evil do you have to be? I mean, there's Zoom bombers, people who crash public Zoom meetings and have obscenities and racism and awful things while people are just trying to communicate with each other during a scary time. These people are the worst. All right. I feel good about what we accomplished today. There's enough shit going on in the world. Please do not muddy it with your own personal brand of evil. Just stay at home. There. I fixed it. If you want to give me a dilemma to solve, put it in the reviews on iTunes podcast app. That's what she said with Sarah Spain. Review, give me millions of stars, and then tell me your dilemma in your review, and maybe I'll solve it on the pod. Thanks, as always, for lasting about an hour with me.
That's what she said.